You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
We're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the A-Side Live Chat on MMAfighting.com. I am, of course, Jose Youngs. With me is my partner in crime. I don't know what she is on my screen compared to yours, Alex Savage. Alex, as we like to call her. Why does it not say Cool Alex this week, Casey?
Oh, hold on.
On her
hold
lower
on.
Third.
Oh, jeez. Here we go. Look. Hey, happy?
See, now it's official. Sorry, AK Lee. You're still other Alex. But, and then Casey Lyon, of course, on the ones and twos behind the scenes. As you can see, I'm sitting outside, which means I am definitely not in Arizona. I am all the way across the country in the beautifully overcast 80-degree Rhode Island. Phenomenal. I got the ocean breeze. I got some, my old neighbor is apparently growing pumpkins next door. So I got a bunch of like a pumpkin patch going on over here. So 10 out of 10 time all around. But you guys don't care about Rhode Island. You guys just want to talk about the calamari, I bet. I know,
yeah.
King does, but you guys know the drill. This is our podcast. This is your all podcast. Leave your question on Twitter, right? YouTube comments. Casey's manning it all. It's probably a lot to talk about. There's been a lot of happenings in the heavyweight and light heavyweight division. Probably get some questions about, hopefully we get some questions about this weekend's card, but you never know. We have not screened these. I don't know if Casey has. I'm sure he has. But without further ado, Casey, what is our first question?
First question.
Frankie from Trumbo on the site. Does Frankie have anything left to make a run at 135 for the first time in his career? Will be at a speed disadvantage against the young guns of 135. So, yes, Frankie Edgar, I assume that's who they are referring to, is former lightweight champion, for UFC featherweight title contender. He came up short twice at featherweight, was the champion at lightweight for a very long time, lost it to Benson Henderson on two questionable decisions, and now he is dropping down to 135, a feat that I thought he could have done years ago, but he's doing it in the year 2020. It's been a long time coming, specifically for his fight against Pedro Munhoz. I feel like it's been booked and rebooked several times during this pandemic. So, Casey, I'm going to start with you because you've been covering Frankie Edgar for a very long time. Pretty sure you were at his fight in Tokyo, if I'm not mistaken.
When he beat BJ Penn in Abu Dhabi, the original Fight Island,
and then the original Fight Island, and then eventually he lost it to Benson Henderson in Tokyo. They fought in Tokyo and Denver. I don't remember which one came first, but did like a little walk and talk with him after Hurricane Sandy, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. So, to answer Trumbo's question, does he have anything left to make a run at bantamweight after two careers at lightweight and featherweight?
He's a top level. I believe he's going to be a very good bantamweight. Now make a run. He is jumping into the men's bantamweight division when I honestly think it's never been better in the UFC. So it's kind of weird. Of all the times to jump into the 35 division, this is like the one time the UFC actually probably doesn't need him because there's so many, there's so much good talent and it's so deep right now. But that's just the way timing works. And I think this is a good fight for him against Munhoz. Originally he was booked against Sanhagen, correct?
Yes, in January. But then they pulled him to get one last fight against Zombie at featherweight.
Yeah, so...
Which he lost by knockout.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. But make a run. Yeah, we're gonna find out. we'll know by Saturday evening.
Well, I think you said it best. I think the addition of Frankie Edgar creates a little more issues with the division because he's a big name, and if he beats Pedro Munhoz, who has a win over Cody Garbrandt, the last man that beat him was Aljamain, who's a rightful number one contender. Like, Frankie Edgar has a lot of fun matchups. Don't think they need him, but Alex, that's you. As someone who enjoys someone else on the site, we've never seen Frankie Edgar sucked out. We've never seen him dehydrated because he didn't cut any weight at lightweight. He barely cut any weight at featherweight. And now we're going to see a emaciated Frankie Edgar on the scale. What are you expecting in terms of how his skill set and physical tools will translate to a smaller division?
I don't think we're going to see much of a problem. I mean, it's not, obviously he's probably been thinking about this for a long time and he wouldn't do it if he couldn't make it. Yeah, I agree with everything that Casey's saying. Like, do I think he can make a run for the title? No, only because I don't think he's going to have to make a run. Like you said, he's a big name, might not have to go through the rankings to get that shot. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, like you said, I think we're going to know a lot more after Saturday, after we see him, you know, in the bantamweight division for the first time. But I don't think I see him as a champ in the division. It's yeah. It's such a deep division right now. I just don't see that happening.
Honestly, I just want to see matchups at this point. Like, yeah. I really want to see him fight Dominic Cruz really, really badly. Obviously, he's not going to get a third shot at Aldo. I doubt he's going to rematch Uriah Faber, but there's fun fights for him to take.
Wouldn't that be just horribly cruel if somehow he has to fight Aldo again at 35? That would be just right. That's just cruel.
I don't think he'll fight Marlon Moraes, considering they're former teammates, but there's fun fights.
Oh, there's so many fun fights for Frankie at 35. Let's just hope he's just, you know, doesn't get hit too hard. And you know what I mean? Like, it just, because, you know, he's a guy that gets hit a lot, and he's been in this game for a while. And historically, when the guys get older, they don't get smaller. You know, they go up in weight, and, you know.
Yeah.
But do you think, I never really thought about it, but do you think the UFC is really waiting for the results of this fight to decide if Jan and Aljo is going to happen? Like, do you think, if Frankie just steamrolls Munoz, like, he could leapfrog everyone? Do you think the UFC is really holding out for that?
I hope not.
I hope not, too.
I haven't thought about it until right now.
Oh, we lost you.
Anything is possible.
Oh, was that?
Anything is possible. Oh. By God, I hope not.
Alex, did Jose go out for you? Or was that just me?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, I heard you guys the whole time.
No, you did one of those things where you're just talking about calamari in Rhode Island, and you froze for like 5 seconds and going... Frankie Edgar. So,
Frankie Edgar, don't eat too much calamari or you won't make weight. There you go. That's my calamari talk for the day. Anyway, but I want to see him. I am super, super intrigued to see him on the scale. Like we've said before, Frankie has always been undersized. I still think their bantamweight's bigger than him. Like, Aljamain Sterling is a huge bantamweight. Corey Sandhagen is a huge bantamweight. So even at 135, I still think there's going to be a significant reach disadvantage for him. And remember, someone said he can make 125. Don't want to see that. I want to see him on the scale first. But I'm hyper excited for this fight.
Yeah, I don't want to see him at 125. He could probably make 125, just not maybe completely healthy. But I don't think anyone makes 125 healthy anymore, considering how big all those guys are. I'm excited for the that one fight on this fight card, the UFC fight card this Saturday.
Anyway, thank you for the question, Trumbo, long time commenter. From Zakuko Kegi on the site, after Daniel Cormier said he couldn't see out of his left eye, why wasn't the doctor called in to check on him? A fighter is saying should raise a red flag. 100%. I said this when the fight was happening and told my girlfriend who was watching it. They're like, why don't they stop the fight? I'm like, hey, I you're asking the right questions. You don't even watch fights. And that's the first thing that comes to your mind. Remember when was it Roman Salazar when he fought Kid Yamamoto in LA on that UFC 184? Same thing. He got poked in the eye and they said, can you see? And he said, no, that was a wrap. They stopped the fight right there. So you are not wrong, Zakuko Kegi. But Alex, what did you think when you heard Daniel Cormier say he couldn't see in a title fight against arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time?
Well, actually, so my power is out during this, so I didn't hear when this happened. PJ was watching on his phone, like, in the corner, and I was just trying to keep, like, checking the lights and stuff. But, so he said it during the fight, is what you're saying, like, in his corner?
Around, yeah.
Okay.
There's some context missing in this question. It's very important.
Go ahead.
Now, when Daniel Cormier actually said during the fight, during the end of, was the end of the third round? Is that when?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think.
I can't remember the exact count, but it was the end of a round. But
it was right at the end of the third round. He got a significant eye poke. Obviously, an eye poke that tore his cornea. He had to go immediately to the hospital after the fight. Huh? Yeah, he had to go. He got stabbed in the eye. and he signaled to the ref. It's like, hey, ref, my eyeball is like poked in. And basically, ref Goddard just didn't believe him. He said, nope, you got punched in the eye. It turned out that was false. He really did get poked in the eye. So basically, from that point on, it's a legal injury. For as far as a technical aspect, like it's the punch from the judging from the refs, your eye is split in half right now because of a punch, not because of a finger went through it. So when he went to his corner and said, "I can't see," he wasn't telling the commission or the doctors right. that he was just telling his coaches that. Now what I think, and this is totally my speculation, Daniel Cormier knew he got poked in the eye. He knew it wasn't a punch. When he's saying that, he is really telling the audience. He's really telling everyone at home, "I can't see." You know, he wants us to know that, okay, guys, I'm gonna go out there, but I'm fighting on one eye. This is bullshit, but I'm fighting on one eye. And that's because Daniel Cormier, he's a veteran. You've heard it. If a guy can't see, they never tell the ref, "I can't see," you know, mm-hmm. even though they probably can't see, you know. So by Daniel Cormier actually saying that out loud with a camera in front of him, he knew there's a camera in front of him. He knew he's on the broadcast. He knew there's not a giant crowd drowning the noise out. I mean, this to me, that was just a bit of a cry for help. You know, just go, "Hey, guys."
And then, what about someone more experienced? Diego Sanchez did the same thing. He's like, "I can't see. I can't see. I can't fight." Mm-hmm. He basically stopped that fight himself when he told the ref.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree. I still think there's if you can't see him, Diego, like when we had this conversation on the A side, do you fault Diego Sanchez for that? I don't. Couldn't see how to fight. He was being honest, and they stopped the fight and he got the W. But yeah. I don't think a champion wants to win a belt like that.
But Diego was telling the doctor that. Dan Cormier was telling his coaches that. That's the thing. Yeah. But he was telling his coaches while the camera was on him, knowing that the camera, he didn't whisper, "Hey, Bob, my eyes hurt." You know, he said it so we can all hear. And I think that's very smart by DC, because he wants the history books to know that he fought those last two rounds, you know, one eye. And I'm sure in a lot of pain, because it's not like your eye just goes out. It's just like, I don't even know what type of pain that is.
I can't even imagine what the next day was after the adrenaline wore off and his eye was closed and it's swollen shut. Like, it's got to be the most brutal feeling in the world.
Mm-hmm. See, so I got a comment. It says, no, on the YouTube, it says, "No, Casey, you're wrong. He was talking to his corner, not the audience." No, DC was talking to you at home. Like I said, he could have whispered to Bob. You see that all the time. Like, when guys, like, when they say their knees hurt to the corner, and then the people at home text the other, they text the, you know, their friends are going, they text the other, their opponent's corner going, "Hey, you know, do you know your opponent's knees hurt?" Usually they don't get it in time, but you've heard that all the time. DC said something so significant right there, like out loud with a camera right in front of him. He knowing that we are going to hear it. So, I think DC was just still really upset that Goddard didn't believe him. And, that's why, but going back to the question, that's why the fight wasn't stopped right then, because there was no doctor in there. He was telling the corner.
So. Sure. Anyway, good question, Sakuko Keki. I hope Casey answered it for you.
Sorry, yeah. I've been really, like, bugged about this since the fight, you know?
I will say, we don't know. Like, we're all speculating.
Yeah, this is speculation.
We have no idea if Daniel Cormier did that on purpose, because he might have been punched in the head so many times that he wasn't even thinking about a camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, also, maybe he's just used to talking really loudly between rounds because there's always a crowd there. And now there's no crowd. He's still just talking loudly. Like, this is all speculation. We don't know exactly what was going through his head. As bees swarm around me on this flower bed. From EKC, what is your favorite Calamari experience, Jose? Okay, we'll talk about it. I didn't watch the video, but enough people text me. Enough people tweeted at me. Enough people sent this, everything about this at me. Representative McNamara of Rhode Island. What was it like, the roll call or whatever it was at the DNC? He's in charge of the Democratic Committee here in Rhode Island. He's also the representative of my home city of Warwick. So I've seen this guy a million times growing up. He decided it was a really good idea to have a chef from Iggy's Dough House and Clams hold a plate of calamari like a goon off to the side. I can assure you everyone in Rhode Island is very embarrassed about this because it just looked dumb. But what they're talking about, that's the only thing that matters. Calamari, as you know, Casey, I don't have to tell you this, is the official state appetizer of Rhode Island. You know who put that into, you know who brought that to the house? You guessed right, McNamara. McNamara watched that on the record. So the calamari is the official appetizer of the state around. Not the official food. That's still Quahog's, which is not a real city. It's based off of Cranston, Rhode Island, for everyone that asked me about that. I think Rhode Island has like $19 million a year in like importing, exporting of squid, and has the has like the biggest squid fleet, fishing fleet in the country. So he wanted that to be recognized. And for whatever reason, he thought standing in Oakland Beach with a plate of calamari was the right thing to do. Oakland Beach also sucks. I'm not going to lie. You guys like the beach, right? I'm sure you guys don't like stepping on in like syringes and broken glass and stuff like that. If you do like it, Oakland Beach. Why he chose that spot is beyond me, but that was a very bizarre scene for me. I hope they asked you, Casey.
So funny. So, cool, Alex. What's your best calamari experience?
My best calamari experience is, if you've never been to South Africa, I highly recommend it. It's the most beautiful place on earth. It's absolutely surreal. But everything is so cheap down there. So you could get like a calamari dinner with like a glass of wine for like $8. And you're like right on the beach, right by the ocean and the perfect scenery. So that's mine. $8 calamari, glass of red wine.
Casey, do you even eat calamari?
Of course. Yeah. But
what do you mean, of course? You don't eat a lot of things then, Norm. You also drink your soy, so of course. I have to ask you when it comes to food.
But all I would say about calamari, use your Google and look up, This American Life did a podcast a few years back about the calamari. You know about this, Jose? But is it calamari or is it pig anus? And how basically they taste exactly the same. You can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
So,
I could tell the difference.
Oh, a challenge.
Well, I can honestly say, I have no idea.
All right, well, next week.
My experience, someone talking about it, not eating it.
All right, next question.
Come on. Next question. Next seafood-related question. Prediction from Maria Agapova. This is a good question from Phantom Mr. Stationary, a longtime commenter. Is his Twitter profile is still Pete C. Carroll holding up a crystal, which I'm sure we're going to have we have a box of goodies, I hear, Casey.
Oh, yeah.
For later on.
Whenever we're ready.
We'll talk about it. Apparently, I have one waiting for me in Arizona. I'm just not here at the moment. But Pova is one of the – I don't think she's a future contender yet. She's awesome. I think she's a very exciting fighter. She is so fun to follow on social media. She's like one of the best – like she's always trying to sell her paintings and what have you. And she's a very interesting person outside of fighting. Casey, what are your thoughts?
For her fight this weekend in general? Oh, this weekend she's fighting Shayna Dobson. The 3-4 Shayna Dobson. I think Shayna Dobson is the only below 500 record in the UFC. I would have to think that.
Gogenzaki.
Maybe Gogenzaki. Okay. But no, this should be a nice showcase fight for her. And I don't really have any too many broad predictions for her. I just think she's an exciting fighter, and this is a good showcase matchup for her on a fight night card.
I was very disappointed that we didn't get her we didn't get a post fight scrum with her. The last time she fought, she beat Hannah Cyphers by submission on the I Calvillo card and got performance of the night. I was very much looking forward to her. She reminds me of the way she talks and the way she uses her social media reminds me of a young Joanna. She's an absolute monster inside the octagon. She lost to Tracy Cortez on the Contender Series. Lost fair and square. I don't think it was the best fight in the world. I think eventually if they run that back like further down the road, could be completely different. But she
was that at 125? Was Tracy Cortez a 25er? You remember?
I think she is 125ers. I think the Hannah Cyphers fight was just a short notice fight, so it might have been 125.
Okay, I got you. Yeah. I think you're right, Cypher, too. Yeah.
I think Cyphers went up in weight to take that fight. But don't quote me on that. But she lost to Tracy and then got a submission in TKO win in Invicta. So, and the problem is, I think the good thing is 125 is so that she could maybe hopefully not get skyrocketed up too quickly. But Alex, your thoughts on an emerging female talent at 125?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, the problem when you get such a quick submission or a quick finish is we didn't get to see a lot of her fights, and I haven't, you know, watched her before she got into the UFC, so we haven't seen that much of her. But what we do know about her is that, yeah, like you said, she's an absolute monster. So I'm looking forward to maybe getting some more time with her, some more camera time, see what she's capable of.
I think she's a fighter that the UFC is going to try and push very well. She, like I said, go follow her on Instagram and stuff. It's either her training, her taking selfies with all of her teammates, or her trying to sell her paintings. And they're all like little squared paintings that I really wanted to talk to her about, because anytime someone has a exciting talent, you know, I'm all about it. But and we got a question about it, which is like another, like, who, how many questions do we get about at flyweight besides Valentina? Like, we didn't get any questions about Jennifer Maia and Maria Agapova. We got a question about Maria Agapova.
I didn't even know she was a flyweight. I just found out.
I like her a lot. I think she's gonna. She's very. I haven't interviewed her one on one, but I think she would. If Mike Heck from What the Heck, get her on the show. She'll be fun.
Oh yeah. Her personality is awesome. Her English is
her English is good.
It's good. Yeah. Does she train out? Was it Kazakhstan?
I think she's at ATT.
Oh no, you're right. You're right. Okay. She's from Kazakhstan, but now she's living and training in Florida, I think, or at least for a training camp.
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. Why is Casey still on the show? He is terrible. Blah blah blah.
I think Maria Agapova is like 21 or 22, something like that. So she's has a super bright future going forward.
Cool. All right.
Ooh, from at the Seaside on Twitter. Who has a better comeback, Lionheart Smith or Lawler? From hashtag the eighth side. Why did you tag Anthony Smith but then not tag Robbie Lawler? Why'd you tag either of them anyway? Comeback means comeback, I assume. So, Casey, you've covered both. You've covered Anthony Smith when he was a Bellator. I don't use this term lightly, but he was a Bellator cast off. Mm-hmm. And he went and fought a bunch of regional got the UFC, and then they fought for John Jones. So, better career comeback, Anthony Smith or Robbie Lawler? I have an answer, but what is yours?
So Lawler is coming back to face Magny, correct? And is that official?
Is it back to his career comeback, like from where they were at one point in their career, or where they're bouncing back after a loss?
Oh, is that what we're talking about? If you're talking about career wise, Lionheart Smith, he has one of the most incredible career comebacks. He was a mid-level middleweight at best, like a C plus, you know, B minus level middleweight. And then he got sent back to the regionals. He lost fights in the regionals. It wasn't even like he got like one, you know, he went on this great run in like just the Midwest circuit. He actually got his first fight back. He lost, got a couple wins back. Then all of a sudden, like he's a legit A-level 205-er. Well, yeah, I'll be nice. A-level 205-er. Now, he's coming back to a super tough fight against Rakic, which I was like, man, the UFC is not being kind to me. I think Rakic is he is a future title contender. Actually, behind Jiří, I think he's my second biggest prospect. Well, I won't call Jiří a prospect, but he's my second biggest guy to look forward to as far as future title contenders at 205. But, no, I think Lionheart Smith's career comeback outweighs Lawler. He's bigger.
Alex?
I agree 100% with Casey, yep. I mean, I'm a little biased. I'm a huge Anthony Smith fan. But what he has done, I'm not going to repeat everything that you just said. I mean, I think it just speaks for itself, yeah.
I'll play devil's advocate. I'll say Robbie Lawler, because Robbie Lawler actually won a UFC championship in a new division that he wasn't in Strikeforce. Robbie Lawler was a middleweight. You talk about middling middleweight. What was like? Did Robbie Lawler have a winning record in Strikeforce at middleweight? I don't think so. If it was, it was right there. Like, he lost to Kennedy, Jake Shields, Babalu, and then he has like that epic win over like Scott Smith and I think Scott Smith was Elite XC maybe. Like,
yeah, that was the Manhoof fights,
was
yeah.
That epic. You're talking about comebacks like in a fight. Like, Robbie Lawler's KO over Melvin Manhoof is one of the craziest knockouts I've ever seen in my entire life. After getting the soul beaten out of his legs, and then comes back, rattles off a couple wins, and then gets thrown into a vacant title fight against Johnny Hendricks in back-to-back fight of the years. I'll say Robbie Lawler because he won a championship.
Oh yeah,
I remember Robbie Lawler trained at Power MMA in Arizona for a while. And when he would train, Case, I'm sure you heard the stories of Robbie Lawler would. He wasn't really, his head wasn't into MMA for a little bit. He would just show up and shadow box for an hour and leave. Like, he wouldn't do much else. And then he went to ATT and, like, reinvented himself at welterweight. So, yeah, I'll say Robbie Lawler. But it's really hard. Everything you guys said, like, especially because Anthony Smith lost on the regional scene before making the comeback, that's huge. But I'll play devil's advocate and say Robbie Lawler.
There was a point before Anthony even made it to any big organization where he was actually below 500. I think at some point he was a 6-7 fighter on the Midwest regional MMA scene where most cards are like literally in the back of like intense in the back of parking lots at that time, especially. Yeah. So, yeah, I think
you just have to love fighting at that point.
Yeah. I really enjoy both those guys and for completely different reasons, but, yeah.
Well,
I have a good little Robbie Lawler story though. When he fought Melvin Manhoef, because you're mentioning that fight. So me and Ariel Helwani were backstage waiting to interview him after that fight. And he comes in, you know, he comes around the corner. They bring him to our little area. We can interview him. It was a one-on-one. And he's limping over. And we ask him, I was like, oh, hey, Rob, do you want to sit down for this? Need a chair? He's like, no. So we do the interview. You know, Robbie says this thing and everything. And as soon as we stop recording, Robbie is like, give me that chair. And he just like basically almost collapses. And he was just in so much pain, but like he was such like a fucking man. Like he was like, nah, yeah. he didn't show anything.
Huh? So that fight against Roy McDonald, which many people consider the greatest fight in the history of the UFC. The next day, he went and sat octagon side to watch his teammates at the Ultimate Fighter finale. His face was all stitched up. He had ice all over him. And he still, not only did he sit there, he went and did an interview backstage and his lip was still like splitting open on the broadcast while I was talking. So yeah, Robbie Lawler's cut from a different cloth than most human.
Yeah.
That's both of them are.
And at the time I thought like, oh, his legs must be bruised up or whatever. But then it turns out, no, Robbie's like, those kicks that he took from Melvin Manhoef were so hard. Like they literally just tore the ligaments in his leg. Like just from the impact.
Have you seen that fight, Alex?
No. Mm-mm.
You know what? It's the whole fight is on YouTube just because it's so it's a one round fight. We're talking about that was a one round fight, right?
I'm pretty confident.
We had this conversation like greatest one round fights. That none of us mentioned that. That's way up there for me. Basically, Melvin Manhoef uses Robbie Lawler's shins as a football and he just punts him into the upper deck for about 3 minutes before Robbie Lawler lands one punch that just deads Melvin Manhoef. Top seven knockouts I've ever seen. I think in just terms of excitement, not in terms of like the stakes or anything, but in terms of just craziness, top five or seven.
It's up there with, it reminds me, it's similar to the Pete Sell, Scott Smith knockout where you're like, this guy's done. And Melvin Manhoef is just going in for the kill at that point. And it was just, all you weirdos at home listening in your car and podcasts, turn this off and go log into YouTube and Google that fight.
Finish the podcast and then go watch it.
Yeah.
There you go. Sam Harris 999 on Twitter. Anderson versus Hall predictions. Well, let me correct you there. It's Hall versus Silva. Uriah Hall is ranked. Anderson Silva.
Okay, wait.
Use both their last name.
Okay, that's weird. Okay, Anderson.
It's Anderson. It's Hall versus Silva. Or Uriah versus Anderson. But who uses Anderson? Like, just it's Silva.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anderson Silva is supposedly coming back to face Uriah Hall. They were previously booked, I want to say, UFC 198 back in 2016.
Curitiba, right? It was in Curitiba.
Yes, Anderson Silva had emergency gallbladder surgery, like, the week of the fight. So that was scrapped, which is just the narrative of Uriah Hall's career. Every big-name fight he gets is scrapped at the last minute. It just happened again to him in Yoel Romero. Now he gets the Anderson Silva fight. Alex, what are you expecting in this fight?
I'm going to pick Hall to win this. I think that guy's just, like, a tough son of a bitch. I mean, you look at, like, his losses, too. Like, his record's not amazing. But the losses he has are against, like, the best. You know, Brunson, Whitaker, Costa. I mean, and then you look at Anderson Silva recently, and unfortunately, you know, you can't keep up that sort of greatest of all time forever, unfortunately.
I would have to favor Uriah Hall, especially if, well, this is five rounds, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a main event for a fight night. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, man, that's tough. Anderson is Anderson. This is going to be, I think it's going to be a lot of staring at each other.
No.
I hope so.
It's going to be a lot of staring. Because Uriah, I like Uriah Hall as like a fighter. He's getting better interviews after his like 7 or 8 years of hating the media. I feel like he fights too much on instinct, looking for that one big shot, rather than like put together a game plan and then go out there and implement it. That's why I was so curious about him fighting Jacare, him fighting Yoel, especially because he's at Fortis MMA, where he's looked better than ever. This is like the new and improved Uriah Hall. I favor him. I just feel like it's going to be a lot of like, no, you throw, no, you throw, no, you throw. A lot of feints, but not as exciting as Till Whitaker, I think. Because that just felt like that was just boiling at that point. It was like a pressure-filled fight. Anyway, Casey, what do you think?
The crazy part, Anderson is going to be 45.
He's 45. The oldest fighter in the roster.
45 years old, and you're fighting Uriah Hall. And the crazy part is like we're kind of even debating this. We're like, well, you know, I think this could happen. This could happen. But we're not going, oh, this 45-year-old man's gonna get stomped. No, we go, oh, it could go. You know, I'm picking Hall, but I could see it going other way. You know, so I just think just the fact that he's a 45-year-old man in the cage of Uriah Hall, and we're still calling this a competitive fight is incredible for Anderson Silva. But is this gonna be the one fight where we see Anderson Silva straight up just like deaded, like Weidman did to him, you know? Because has he been really just hit hard where he's just been on the ground, like, ugh?
I mean, he's been wobbled, but he's not
wobbled,
been, like,
yeah, but yeah.
Like, he got wobbled. He's been wobbled against Bisping. Got a little wobbled against Izzy, but not like falling on the ground.
Yeah, like where, like, oh, man.
Get up.
Yeah, like where he's all survival instincts. But, yeah, I'm just – I'm a weirdo. I'll go ahead and say it. I wanted to see Anderson Silva versus Conor McGregor. That's just a stupid fight. We're in a stupid sport. Let's put them together. It's catch weight 180. I don't care. A fight that doesn't mean anything except paychecks for both guys. And I think that's more interesting than him versus Hall. But good for Uriah Hall.
Yeah, good for Uriah Hall. Also, I would favor Uriah Hall in this. I don't know if he gets deaded, but I want the new and improved Uriah Hall, maybe. Who was the last fight? It was a split, right?
Uriah Hall?
Yeah, was that Shootface?
It might have been split, but I'm pretty sure that was a bad split. I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah. We all kind of came out going, oh, Uriah Hall. That was probably one of the best Uriah Halls we've seen.
I think the fight before that when he deaded Bevan Lewis, that was the best one. That was one of the best Uriah Halls we've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, yeah. I guess against a better name opponent in the sense of Carlos Jr.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he's spinning back at Gegard Mousasi.
Yeah, but, yeah, Mousasi got that one back real good, too. Hey, man, it's MMA. So, yeah. So to answer your question, we are excited about that fight. And but imagine seriously, imagine if Anderson wins. That's kind of the weird part. If Anderson actually wins that fight, that means he's gonna get a tougher opponent next, and he's gonna be 46.
He has two fights left on his contract, and I think he's gonna wrap it up after that.
We're gonna see Anderson versus Mike Tyson at some point. something weird like that.
Fight Roy Jones. They've been talking about it for like 15 years.
You're right. Or Roy Jones. Yeah, that's even more obvious. Yeah,
that was the original crossover fight. That was, if that happened 10 years ago, that's massive. Anyway, thank you for the question, Sam Harris.
Do do do.
Two questions from Nathan Timblin on Twitter. With John Jones at heavyweight, do you see DC coming out of retirement and fighting the winner of Reyes versus Jan? Do you believe that this is the final time we see John Jones fight what at light heavyweight? To put that to put this question into context, Daniel Cormier has retired, as he said, after losing to Stipe Miocic at UFC 255, which wrapped up that trilogy. John Jones, the day Daniel Cormier posted that Instagram, Alex is shaking her head, posted that. John Jones comes out and says, vacating the title, gonna go to heavyweight, UFC champions in my future. I think he even said something like, if any light heavyweight defends the title, wins and defends the title 6 times, I'll donate $100K to the charity of your choice, this and that. Alex, you were shaking your head. So to answer both these questions, what do you make of John Jones vacating the title, going up to heavyweight, and now Dominic Reyes and Jan Blachowicz are allegedly fighting for the now vacant title?
I guess I feel like it's a cowardly thing to do to vacate the title and not retire. If you were going to retire and vacate, I totally get it. You're done. You're done when you're done, and you make that call. But to say that you're going to forget the light heavyweight title and just move up to heavyweight, like, why? I guess I just don't understand the purpose. Why not defend it again? Because you're afraid to lose it? Like, you want to go out on top by vacating? Like, to me, it's just a selfish thing to do. I just think it doesn't really make any sense. To me, I wouldn't do it that way, but I'm not John Jones. I don't anticipate to fight him at heavyweight. That seems a little too far-fetched for me, even in the UFC, but I guess never say never.
Yeah, seriously. If John Jones wins the heavyweight championship of the world, I would imagine they would probably at least have a conversation with Daniel Cormier. Whether Daniel Cormier does it is another conversation. But Casey, what do you make of this whole John Jones vacating, moving up?
It's weird.
It's just
weird. Especially vacating, because I don't understand why you couldn't just keep the belt and do the whole two belt thing, because the UFC loves pushing the whole two belt thing. The only reason I think that may have been impossible is because, like Daniel Cormier has said in the past, the UFC just does not trust John Jones. And can you imagine what kind of insane negotiating power and leverage that John Jones would have if he had two belts that he controlled, two weight classes?
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, God. So maybe that was just like this crazy line in the sand that the UFC was like, no, you cannot have two belts. You can have one. But you have to give it up, you know, go to another weight class. But
that's a good point.
But that's a lot of speculation. I'm just kind of going my past experiences that these John Jones in the UFC has had. But good luck to John. I think he's a perfect two. I think his build is perfect for 205. And I don't think it's a great idea, man, but I want to see Stipe John. I want to see Ngannou John, but I don't want John Jones to leapfrog Ngannou. Ngannou.
Francis Ngannou.
Ngannou, yeah.
Yeah. He got injured for that on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Which is fine. It was a very polite criticism. It's like, Ngannou. Okay, not Ngannou.
It's Ngannou.
Ngannou, okay.
I will say this. I'll add to the overarching narrative of this. John Jones didn't immediately see he was going to heavyweight. He vacated and said, maybe I'll be back later if the UFC and I can come to some sort of agreement. Like 20, 30 minutes later, he's like, just got off the phone with the UFC. We talked about going to heavyweight. It looks like that's the future for me. So initially he just retired or went on a hiatus. And then 30 minutes later, apparently got off the phone with the UFC. I think Casey is right. The UFC just didn't want him to have two belts. Especially because John Jones is a fighter that he puts so much planning into his fights and moves. I don't think he just wanted to be a blown up light heavyweight. I think he's going to put on a lot of muscle going to heavyweight. And I don't think he wants to put on a lot of muscle and then lose it and then put on a lot of muscle and then lose. He could. I don't know. This is all just me speculating. But I think the UFC is happy that he's actually going heavyweight, because Dana White seemed very intrigued by it. But I want to see the Reyes rematch. I really did. But yeah, we'll probably do that.
But you know, but he's so annoying. We've seen John Jones when he puts on a lot of weight. That's what he said. That's why he said he had such a lackluster performance against OSP. Like a more bulkier John Jones isn't a better John Jones. Like, so that's why I'm really surprised. To be honest,
supposed to fight Daniel Cormier at UFC 196, right? Not 196, 195. I think that was the original plan, and then OSP slid in. This was John Jones' return fight.
Yeah,
he bulked up. He also fought a southpaw, which John Jones does not do well against southpaws. Never takes short notice fights, and I think that was just after all this trouble I've caused, I won't say no to this fight because he knew he could beat OSP. But that, I think that was a lot of things going into that fight that John Jones didn't have the best performance of his career.
But John Jones did give the finger to DC when he left the cage. So always the good promoter, John Jones is. Man, but yeah, but as much as I don't like John going to heavyweight, but then I go, man, Ben Rothwell versus John Jones, that sounds cool. just random fights. Kind of like why I like Anderson Silva versus Connor. I just want these fights to happen, but like I just know that these are very expensive fights for them to happen. So, yeah.
Like Alexi Olenek versus John Jones. Verdum, yeah. Like Verdum's not anymore, but like JDS. Or like what about Overeem versus John Jones? I will watch that every single weekend. Like Alex Overeem was calling out John Jones 10 years ago. Like I'm 100% in for that fight. Curtis Blades, Derek Lewis. Like there's more fun fights at heavyweight, but I still selfishly, I think I want to see that Reyes rematch first before he bumps up to heavyweight.
Yeah.
No matter what the outcome of Reyes, Blachowicz, I feel like no matter what happens, whoever wins that, John's going to hold it above them. They're like, whoa, whatever, guys. I'm still the champ, even though you have the belt. I feel like they're not going to be considered legitimate. They're going to be considered paper champions for a long time.
Like when Connor was holding the belt hostage for so long.
Yeah.
And then you're not wrong, but
yeah, I fighting would still
over either of those two. I would, like, in my mind, John Jones would still be the light heavyweight champion because he never lost.
Technically.
But that's another art. Technically.
That's so annoying. I'm so annoyed by it.
you're just thinking about it.
I'm just like stewing, like, because that's such a John Jones move. Like, one, to do it as we're all talking about DC's retirement in quotations, but
that's something none of us talked about. Like, he announced all this the day Daniel Cormier put out that statement. Like, Daniel Cormier retires. John Jones is like, go to heavyweight. It reminds me, as I know you guys love baseball, you guys love talking about baseball. When Alex Rodriguez announced his, so in baseball you have the opt-out clause, where after like X amount of years, if you add it to your contract, you can opt out and get a bigger and look for a bigger contract. Alex Rodriguez at the time had the highest contracts in the history of baseball, decided to announce he was opting out the bottom in the last inning of the series that the Red Sox are playing. So while the Red Sox are winning the World Series, everyone's like, hey, A-Rod's a free agent. It reminds me of that. But and then he ended up getting a bigger contract, and then he got popped for all kinds of steroids. So,
and then he married Jennifer Lopez. Like, life is. Married?
Or are they still just dating?
Oh, I don't know. I guess technically, I don't know. But either way, he lives with J Lo. Could be worse.
He's very good at commenting on baseball.
And I would say this: "Waiting for Tonight" by J Lo, still a jam. still a jam. Next time you're in the gym hitting the weights, getting those gains, Jose. Play that in your little ear pods. You'll be like, yeah, I feel it.
Yeah.
Cool, Alex gets it.
Probably not. I am agnostic to Jennifer Lopez. I just don't really have an opinion.
Interesting. Okay.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Like most people love her, but
she's fine. I don't wish any ill will or I can't honestly sit down and think of anything any type of media I've absorbed. Of Jennifer Lopez. Like, she's in bad movies.
You didn't watch The Cell? Was it The Cell that she was in? What was that sci-fi movie she was in?
I have literally no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know. I wouldn't watch her sci-fi movies, but I watch her rom-coms, obviously.
Out of Sight is awesome. She was great in Out of Sight.
When she was at the time dating Ben Affleck, and she went to a Red Sox game and got booed. I thought that was kind of funny. But that's because Ben Affleck. We don't claim Ben Affleck anymore in Boston.
Rude.
Why?
I think she got booed because she was sitting next to Ben Affleck, not because.
Oh, okay.
Why do you not like Ben Affleck? What's going on?
Well, New England is very weird. And
End of story. All right.
Yeah, New England is very weird. Fact that if someone is from here and they become successful and leave, we're immediately like, nope, not ours. Beat it, nerds. So the fact that they all live in California now and they left the cold, miserable New England winter for the sunny California, apparently doesn't sit right for most people here, especially Mark Wahlberg. I don't know many Bostonians that claim him at all. Actually, we kind of think that dude's kind of an annoying.
I can get that. So that makes sense.
Yeah, Mike Wahlberg does suck. And we don't pretend he claims Boston, even though he does. It's gone. He doesn't know any of the slang anymore. Anyway, I digress. Next question. I hope it's Mark Wahlberg.
How about Donnie Wahlberg? What do you guys think about Donnie?
We don't claim him either. Either. The Wahlbergs in general, they're just goons.
Trash.
Yeah, 100%. Beat up a Vietnamese man, and now he has a Vietnamese burger on his menu. I'm not going to get into that. I don't thumb Jay Romero on the site. Or on Twitter, long-time commenter and phenomenal artist. I don't subscribe to the idea that Stipe has to beat Jon Jones before he can be called the baddest man on the planet. But if they eventually fight and Stipe does beat Jon, does he now become the GOAT? Does he not just become the heavyweight GOAT, but an all-time GOAT? His resume, and then the rest of it's kind of cut off of my screen. So, but I get the question. So, Alex, I don't think you. The post-fight show when we had this conversation, so I don't know your thoughts on where Stipe stands in the greatest heavyweights of all time, but if he fights and beats John, does that make him the all-time GOAT?
No. Fortunately for John Jones, moving up to heavyweight I think doesn't really affect his stock as much, because it's just going to be like, oh, well, he was a heavyweight and he's naturally a light heavyweight, so it's really not that big of a deal if he loses. You know, like he's very smart about his moves where he's not going to lose a lot if he goes to heavyweight. So no, I don't think that Stipe beating him makes him the greatest of all time. Let the record show, I don't think that John Jones is the greatest of all time, because I think to be the GOAT, you have to be an all-encompassing great person, and he's kind of disqualified himself from that conversation in my mind. So I think Stipe is the greatest heavyweight of all time right now. I don't think if he beats John Jones, he becomes the greatest of all time, because he's just not in that caliber in my mind.
Who do you put as the greatest of all time?
I'm still kind of on the GSP train.
Yeah. I think it's GSP, John Jones, even Demetrius Johnson, I'll toss in there. I think the only knock on him is there's still that rubber match between Cejudo that we never got. And GSP.
He's 2-0. Hold on.
Yes, I agree. But like
you said, I gotcha.
Like when we bring up the fact John Jones beat DC once, you're like, well, I don't know, man. He has a no contest. Like, nope. Did Demetrius Johnson get a win bonus after beating Henry Cejudo? No. Henry Cejudo took home a big gold belt, so I think that's the only knock on him. I'd probably slot him third. I still think Anderson Silva is like a top five fighter of all time. Like, his peak was insane. But yeah, I do subscribe to GSP as the greatest fighter of all time. I think Stipe, yeah, it's him or Kane, I think, is the best heavyweight. The peak of Kane was just something else, man. He was just battering fools. And then Fedor, to me, in my mind, is still the greatest heavyweight ever. Because his run in Pride is just banana. Like, when he outkicked Krokop, and he out-grappled Nogueira and all these guys. And to this day, I've never seen a heavyweight with faster hands than a prime Fedor in Pride. To me, it's between Stipe, Kane, and Fedor. And I don't think there's a clear front runner at this point.
Yeah.
In terms of talent, like, overarching legacy and accolades, like, yeah, Stipe has, like, all the records. But in terms of, like, their actual abilities in the octagon, it's a three-man race, in my opinion. Yeah. But hey, if John Jones pulls GSP, wins the title, and then defends it a bunch of times, we could be talking about John Jones being the greatest heavyweight.
I just want to say, yeah. A lot of fun matchups.
A lot of fun matchups.
All right.
From Joshua Saya, Slayer_tip on Twitter. What are/were your favorite rivalries between fighters? Could include any promotion. This is an interesting question.
Oh, easily. The Nick Lentz, Charles Oliveira trilogy.
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, yeah. I mean, that kind of transcends the sport, Casey, so I wasn't even putting that.
Yeah, yeah. That's a duh. What other ones? Okay.
Yeah.
I think DC, John Jones is up there.
Yeah. Let's go a little deeper. I think that's everyone knows that one, but I think forgotten ones are maybe like Gilbert Melendez, Josh Thompson.
That one rules. That was like the OG lightweight rivalry.
Yep.
To the point where like Gilbert Melendez left the UFC. I was like, sign to Bellator and give me a fourth fight with Josh Thompson. Like, I wouldn't complain about that at all. Interesting question.
You know, Greg,
I like the I like the GSP Matt Hughes one just because that was like a passing of the guard trilogy. And like now you'd interview, like at the time, Matt Hughes was the greatest welterweight ever. But now you ask him, like I've interviewed him about that. He goes, well, he beat me twice. Like there's really no argument against it. So I liked that fight in terms of the actual like fighting abilities.
I think a great rivalry that we were robbed of because of the way promotions work is actually Cejudo DJ.
Yes.
I think that was a great rivalry. That could have been like, they could have fought four or five times, I feel like.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm just bummed that didn't happen.
Chandler, Eddie Alvarez, yep. Good one.
Did they fight twice?
Eddie Alvarez, they fought twice, and the third one, Eddie Alvarez pulled out with a concussion.
Yeah.
Aoki Alvarez is a good one.
Yep.
Shinya Aoki.
Man, I know I'm forgetting some. You know, actually, another one we've been robbed of that we hopefully will get to see a trilogy of, freaking Connor versus Nate. Like after that, second fight happened, I watched our post show after the Connor Nate 2, and the conversation was, when are they gonna book the trilogy? When are they gonna book the trilogy? Like Monday, we're gonna find out when that next. Like it was just so obvious they're gonna book the trilogy after Connor Nate 2, and it just never happened. So. Sucks at that. I feel like that Shamrock boat's gone.
Shamrock Ortiz is a good one. Fedor Krokop was fun. Wow, there's a million. There's so many. Liddell Ortiz is obviously like the original. Ronda Misha was really important for the women's divisions.
Yeah,
because I think that really like both women like, and even when both women fought. It wasn't a rivalry. Like, Misha Tate obviously hated Ronda and vice versa, but, like, they still, like, you couldn't argue that Misha Tate wasn't the rightful number one contender. So they were the two best that hated each other. So I like those type of rivalries where there's, like, they're not booking the fight just based on the talk. Like, Shannon Anderson's a good one, Lesnar, Mir. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a million of them.
I still want to see even
Cruz versus Team Alpha Male.
Yeah. I know I'm forgetting too many. What are the best female ones? Best female rivals. I know you mentioned Ronda. Oh, like ones we should have had more of, like Cyborg Nunes. That should be like so up there too, but like we didn't get it. You know, we got one, but
I don't think they were a rivalry though.
No, that's what I'm saying. The potential there should have been a great trilogy, I feel like.
Could have been one of the fights that had like, because it's rare when we get the two, not just best, but they're the two greatest female fighters ever, going back through the annals of time. They fight in the same weight class. And I think if they fight 10 times, I think it's 5-5.
I agree.
So I think that could be, and they're both from Brazil. So like Guilherme interviewed like 100 Brazilian fighters or something like that, and they all picked Cyborg, and now Amanda Nunes is the greatest female fighter of all time. Cyborg is 2. Yeah, I think that could have been a great, like, competitive rivalry. They don't have to hate each other. Like, in just terms of what, like, it's like Cejudo DJ. I don't care if they all watch those guys fight in front of nobody, and I want to watch it.
Yeah, I think of Nunes Cyborg, the first fight. I think of that as a lot like DC versus Stipe in the first fight. Yeah, if you just end that fight, if Stipe DC ends with one fight, you go, oh, clearly DC's the greatest heavyweight ever, and Stipe sucks. Nah, man, when guys are this level, you got to run it back a few times. And that's why I feel like Cyborg and Nunes is, you run that back 10 times, you get 10 very unique fights, you know? And that was just, we just got one result that night.
Yep. One fight I would book promotion, the rematch.
Oh, Macy Barber and Paige Van Zandt.
The one that, the rivalry that never fought.
That's dang funny. It. I would have loved to see that.
Man. So what do you think about Casey's already all on board? When I presented this fight to him, it looked like his mind broke for a second because it never crossed his mind on the possibilities. So Alex, what'd you say to, and you all want to say, Paige Van Zandt versus Betch Cohea?
Oh yeah, I knew you. We talked about this last week, I think.
Did we?
I think I watched Casey's mind blow.
Oh yeah, you like stopped. It was like, oh my god.
And I'm all in the promotion. It's just them doing TikTok dance videos. That's all. They just do dance videos on TikTok. That's the only way they promote the fight.
No, dude. How about Instagram Reels?
My God. You know, I laughed when Instagram first did like the stories, and now it's like obviously a normal thing. So I guess I should just shut up about the Reels.
I just like how everything is in one app. I don't gotta download a million apps to all that. Anyway,
you know,
anyone in the comments bring
up? Yeah, it's there a couple before we go to our special presentation. Let's go. I'm gonna fly through YouTube real quick. See if we have any questions in here.
Anything with Colby Covington too? I think obvious, but
yeah, Tyron Woodley called. He did.
And just like no, people are just being very rude in the comments. That's about it.
What are they saying?
Making fun of me, making fun of Alex, making fun of you, something about Rhode Island.
Yeah. I bet half the people in the comments I just didn't know Rhode Island existed until yesterday. Or this show.
Well, if everyone in the comments would like to send us links to their podcasts, and then we could check out, you know, what they're doing, maybe it could help be helpful for us.
Here we go. Here's a little.
Carano versus Rouse.
Sorry, that was
a great fight that from Alan Grant.
You know,
I can't.
Yeah, it's just
Sam Neill profile picture.
Yeah, Sam Neill. You know, I remember when this was talked about by the UFC, and everyone was all like, "Dude, Carano would get crushed. This is such a squash match." But now, after you saw how Rousey handled, you know, adversity, really, who knew? Who knew what could have happened? But we never saw it.
I still think Carano would have won.
Probably, but yeah. Oh yeah, here's a question.
What is next for Cheeto after a big win? not the big win, a big win. Alex, what do you want next for Cheeto Vera after beating Sugar Sean O'Malley?
I don't know. You know, I haven't thought about it. It's like there's so much matchmaking moving around. I'm like not even sure who's available.
I like the Merab Dvalishvili fight just because they both won on the same card. And I feel like if Sugar Sean and Merab had won, they probably would have thrown down. Don't hate that fight. Or Nathaniel Wood Cheeto, just if you're a storyline guy. Marlon Vera retired Brad Pickett, and Brad Pickett is Nathaniel Wood's coach. So I would like that fight too.
Merab's one of those guys that I think is going to be a big name.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's so fun to watch, to interview too.
Yeah. I was shocked when I saw his face. I was shocked he was a bantamweight because he looks like a bigger guy, like from the neck up. I thought he was like massive.
He looks so much bigger than Dodson. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you want next for
Vegeta? I don't like the Merab fight really. I mean, I think they'll fight eventually. I don't know, like Cheeto, something like maybe Cheeto Sanhagen. Oh, is this Sanhagen books? I'm sorry, isn't Sanhagen
fighting Marlon?
Oh yeah, Marlon. I don't think there's a real definitive person Cheeto needs to fight. I just want to see him fight one of those, you know, borderline top 10 guys. That's about it.
What if they run it back with Song Yadong at bantamweight?
Esther goes, he deserves someone in the top 10. So yeah, if they want to run back Yadong, yeah, that sounds good too. Because I know everyone.
Ooh, Rob Font. I'm all about Cheeto Vera versus Rob Font. Sign me up.
All right. Find another question. Oh, here we go.
Put that on the undercard. All the way cater. Anthony Shevchenko, Ariana Lipsky, and then disappeared. Booked for flyweight? Thoughts from Jesus? Watch my 666 on the YouTube comments. Alex, what do you think about Anthony Shevchenko versus Ariana Lipsky?
I like Shevchenko's chances. I think Lipsky's a friggin' savage. And I don't know if we've seen Shevchenko's best yet, but what I've seen so far is not, you know, anything to write home about.
She is clearly the, how would I say this? Mara Jannetty of the Shevchenko brothers, sisters. Casey, what do you think about Anthony Shevchenko versus Ariana Lipsky?
It's a step back for, I think, I feel, well, who did she beat? Yeah, she beat kind of a
Lipsky, by the way.
I'm sorry? You
Lipsky's
every time you say Lipsky, then you then like, your audio drops out. Like
am I still here?
You're still here. You're there.
Ariana Lipsky's unranked and Antonina Shevchenko just fought the number one ranked flyweight. So it's a huge step back in competition for Shevchenko, in terms of like the rankings, but I think this is a much more even fight than her previous two, I think. Yeah. Like her previous two losses were Roxanne Modafari and Shukagin. Mm-hmm. And now she's fighting Ariana Lipsky, who I think has not fought to her potential. Because she dominated KSW, came in with all this hype, laid a couple eggs, and then got back in a gruesome submission win. So I don't hate it. I still favor Lipsky, but I don't hate it as much as most people.
Yeah, I think just because we've seen Shevchenko lose badly, but she was obviously the UFC just put her in with competition way over her head, thinking that she was Valentina or something. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Because there was no reason she should have fought someone like Chikagian. I mean, who's a legit, no matter where you rank her, she's an A-level flyweight, and you just can't call Shevchenko that, Antonia that. So, Antonina, sorry.
So, to put that, Antonina Shevchenko was 7-0 when she fought Roxanne, and Roxanne Modafari was 23-15. Like, she had more losses than Antonina Shevchenko had career fights. And then when Antonina Shevchenko fought Shukagin, she was 8-2, and Shukagin was 13-3. So, like, she's fighting some of the most experienced top-level fighters at flyweight. So I think the Lipsky fight will be closer than people think, but I still favor Lipsky's in that fight.
Yeah, it's
the violence.
Yeah, all right. And one more question real quick. Sorry, a question. Oh, there you go.
Vadim versus Bader. Well, it's Bader versus Vadim. Sorry.
You know they do that now just for you.
I know. I keep correcting them. And no punctuation. Come on, guys. I can't even pronounce the name. So, Casey, what do you think? Bader versus Vadim at for the Bellator light heavyweight title. Why is this just a holding pattern for Bader to fight Corey Anderson?
No, it's not. Vadim is not. What is it? Nemkov, right? Yeah, that guy is not a holding pattern fighter. He is.
Signed.
You're going out. I'm losing you. Wait, I hear someone's TV. Whose TV is that?
No, that's probably PJ in the other room.
Oh well, who's he watching?
No, he's on a sales call.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Working out of a small apartment together.
Oh, no problem. Okay, I was making sure we just weren't getting some weird, like, we're picking up someone's cell phone on our call. No problem. No, that fight's awesome. Nemkov's awesome. That is actually the best fight of the entire MMA weekend.
Yep.
So 100%. Let's go to. All right, we're done with questions.
You said that was the last question.
I know. I should say we're done with questions. All right. So we have a gift that was sent to us. Hold on, let me switch shots. All right, Esther. What we got here?
I know what it is, too. I'm very excited.
You drop it right in front
you
of me.
You got one, too?
Yeah.
What we got?
So this is, I have one waiting for me in Arizona.
So this is... I have to keep the headphones in. Sorry. So this is 35 pounds. No, that's a mic.
Okay, I know.
There you go. It was 35-pound package sent to us. So we're going to open it. And it's sent to us from... Who are the... From the people at the Crystal Council. Vinny and Joe at the Crystal Council. Yeah, I need your help. What are you going away for? I have to keep it. So, thank you so much. We got Crystal Council hats.
Whoa, that's cool.
Got a pink one for the boys and
a gray one for the girls.
Gray one. This is a very. Okay, I gotta sit up.
this is, I think, an explanation.
Got a manuscript?
Yeah, manuscript. This is all. Oh my god. This is so we have a lot to read.
Call Nick K.
It's a cat on screen too. Put the crystals on.
So we have a mat to put the crystals on.
Bunch of stickers.
Oh.
Some stickers. We love stickers because I'm a third grader. Put them on Trapper Keeper. Notepads. Today is. Oh wow! Look at that. See. So we can organize our day by our crystal color. This is awesome.
Sure.
Candles.
Candles. Oh my god.
And crystals.
Oh, okay. We're gonna open. Oh.
Let's just go open them.
Okay, we're gonna open. We can't open all these crystals, but we're. Gonna, oh my goodness. Hold on. Oh, okay. This is like okay. Take out the rest. That's. Oh, this is heavy. Oh, yeah.
Crap. Yeah, okay. Oh my.
I'm gonna pull a muscle. Oh. God, my headphones. This is like, is this a dinosaur egg? What is this?
Okay. Looks like the, it looks like the crystals in Superman.
Yeah, look at this thing. Oh, look at this. Is like, yeah, this is legit like 30 pounds or something. Okay, I'm gonna get a, need a knife, Esther?
I don't know what I did with it. We just scissors.
You lost the blade cutter?
Come on, yeah.
Give me it, come on.
No, I know, it's on the table. We open that. Hold on.
Okay. All right, here we go. Oh, crap.
Is that one crystal, or there's more in there?
Yeah, there's more. There's a lot of other ones in here. This is the big one.
But that's one big one? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, Pete.
You can feel the energy from here. Can you just feel it?
I'm getting stronger. Whoa. Okay.
Plus, this is probably better that we don't scratch it or
whatever.
Oh, this is. Wow. Is that a
chocolate? So, I'm not even sure what this is. So.
It looks like chocolate.
Do we know what it is? This is say that after.
Shiva Lingam.
Shiva Lingam. So here we go. So thank you. Oh my god, I'm sweating. It's like it's 100 degrees here, and I'm holding a 1,000-pound Shiva Lingua. What's it called?
Lingam. The Shiva Lingam aids in understanding the choleric energies such as light and dark, or spiritual and physical. It helps bring total opposites together in perfect harmony, thus causing one to feel complete balance when grasping this stone. Meditating with Shiva Lingam will help balance the mind, especially with strong, overwhelming emotions. This stone helps promote prosperity and joy into any household it is placed in.
Wow.
Oh my god.
That's a crystal.
I broke a sweat holding this.
Okay.
There you go.
It's like a baby.
Yeah, don't drop it.
Child.
So
who said
that? Our friends from the Crystal Council, Vinny and Joe. So,
I don't know, but that's awesome.
All right. So we have a lot more. We'll post some photos later on our Instagram stories or something, but yeah. Oh man, I'm sweating.
Yeah. Work out sometimes, Casey.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, is that it? Some questions?
Yeah, so people suggest I do more squats with the crystal lingua. Crystal, but yeah. Yeah, I just want to say thank you. Hey. And, yeah, and crystal power. Yeah, we got it.
Well, thank you all for the questions. Thank you for the sent to Casey and Esther from the Crystal Council. I cannot remember their names, but thank you so much.
Vinny and Joe.
Casey, I'll start with Casey, anything you got to say before we sign off?
No, that is, thank you, and, thank you for all the nice comments, and, F you to all the mean comments. You guys are jerks. Come on, guys, we're in a pandemic. Be a little nicer to each other.
Rude. Anyway, Alex, what do you got to say?
I'm with Casey. I deleted some nasty comments off YouTube, and I'm gonna block you, and you'll never see our content. Isn't that what you wanted?
Yeah.
Whoa, seriously.
And I'm screenshotting this, and I'm sending it to your parents, by the way. So, yeah.
And your employers. You're canceled.
Like Goodyear.
Anyway, that's Casey. That's Alex. I'm Jose. We'll be back next week probably at the normal time. You can find all of our awesome content on this YouTube page or MMAfighting.com. We got Israel Adesanya's virtual media scrum that you can go watch after this. But before that, go watch Robbie Lawler versus Melvin Manhoef and then come back and watch all of our content. We'll have both Bellator and UFC media days. But until next week, we're out.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.